Welcome to the program for Friday, March 23rd, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Friday at 3, it's the Federal News Countdown. Every week at this time, two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the most important from the past week to people who work for the federal government. They rank them in order and then come in the studio and count them down with me on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This week on the countdown, it is John Kaminsky, senior fellow at the IBM Center for the Business of Government and a veteran of the Office of Management and Budget. Good to see you traveling a lot and back in town, and glad to have you on the program this week.
Thank you very much, Francis.
And the Executive Vice President of Advisory Services at AgileX, Bob Otto, is my other expert on the countdown. Good to see you, as always.
Always great to see you, Francis.
Thank you, sir. We have six great stories that you've chosen, and they're linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we start, as we always do, with...
Number three!
The third most important federal news story of the week for John Kaminsky is from Government Computer News. The headline is, Bringing the Outside Online, Outdoor Agencies Utilize Tech in New Ways. And I will be honest with you, John, this is a good story about some agencies inside the Interior Department that are using technology in interesting ways. I thought we might get to a point where these stories would die down. And quite frankly, it's because I thought eventually we'd think of all of the things that you could do with technology in unique and interesting ways. And these stories still keep coming and keep coming and keep coming. And I think that's a really good thing.
Well, what happened, Francis, is probably a decade ago, these same agencies, the outdoor agencies, the Park Service and the Forest Service and Fish and Wildlife and others, began working together to create a reservation system for visiting the parks, and now they're taking another step. And this is maybe interestingly combined not only with the Open Government and Transparency Initiative of this administration, but also its Customer Services Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing is, as they agencies and Interior has come out with its customer service plan. And its flagship initiative is to integrate six different scientific databases that are within the Department of Interior, Park Service, and Fish and Wildlife, and others, in geological survey, so that people have a one-stop access to scientific information, stuff that you would have to mash up separately before and pull this all together. The other neat thing is that they're putting it onto a common database, which is going to save these agencies money. So it's cost saving, it's customer service, it's using the web. I mean, it's touching all these different points.
There's another piece of this that I thought was really good that I think is very encouraging in Alice Lipovich's story. This says, while the Park Service already prints up materials and sponsors websites, starting this fiscal year, it's also evaluating whether social media can be used more often and more effectively as one of the primary tools for communication. Now, I'm a TripAdvisor geek, and I have the app on my phone, and when I go someplace, even if I already know where I'm going to stay, I like to locate myself on GPS and see what's nice around where I am. And I can envision that kind of an application, whether it's a web app or whatever, doesn't matter, in the same kind of situation where you can go to a particular part of the country and you can see what national parks are around, you can see what facilities are available within them, and that kind of thing. And that's really the opposite of what I think we saw in social media and government a year, 2 years, 5 years ago, which was, we're going to be on Facebook. Well, why are you going to be on Facebook? Well, we're just going to be there, with not really a convincing business case for why you're going to do something like this.
Well, in the case of the customer service plan that the Interior Department released, for example, the National Park Service is going to have a dashboard on its website, and it's going to have real-time visitor data, for example, at Yellowstone. And my guess is if they begin using social media like Twitter, they can start saying, well, you know, the Old Faithful is going to blow in 15 minutes if you want to go over there and watch, and people could pick that up on their Twitter streams.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that as they're beginning to engage this, it's much more of a real-time thing, not just posting historical information.
One of the things that this story mentions is frequently asked questions, expanding the FAQ database, and that's become at a lot of agencies an unintended consequence best practice. Usually unintended consequences has a a negative connotation, but agencies are finding they're saving a lot of money by putting a lot of this information online, and people don't have to use the call centers or communicate with government in a way that they used to have to, because the information they need in many more cases is already available.
Well, the other thing I think is interesting is they've committed to a 24-hour turnaround time on responding to questions.
Why is that significant?
Well, I think that when people are trying to find out something and they want to know, that they get an answer from their government, that it's not something that takes weeks or days, but it's just a 24-hour turnaround.
And that's one of the issues that government has with perception right now is unresponsive, and that would go a long way to do that. John Kaminsky's number three most important federal news story of the week is from Government Computer News. The headline is, Bringing the Outside Online, Outdoor Agencies Utilize Tech in New Ways. Bob Otto, your third most important federal news story is headlined, White House Seeks Public Input for IT Accessibility Plan. It's from Federal Times. And this administration has been pretty persistent in asking for public input. I always fear that you're going to get too many whack jobs that are giving you ideas, but it seems that they're able to see a return on this investment of time to be able to cull through the public comments that they get.
Well, I think you have to think of it this way. No one has the market cornered on good ideas, and good ideas can come through social media. And, you know, your social life and your work life is almost blended together now, and that's one of the real challenges for government. And one of the things that I saw the CIO do earlier this year was announce he was going to develop a new mobile strategy for the federal government. Well, you know, then a few months later, he's talking about merging that in with the existing web reform efforts that's combining all the duplicate websites and streamlining it, et cetera. All that really makes sense to do. But then they take a program like Section 508 that's 12 years old, and they talk about reforming it or improving it as a separate program. And see, to me, that's like a bolt-on. I think that 508 should be designed in the strategies and the policy of the new mobile technology and the new mobile strategies and all the new websites as well. Because, you know, if we don't take a look at 508 in the overall design at the highest level in all this, what we're going to have is what we have today, which is 80 to 90% of the websites have some 508 issues with them.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets worse than that, Francis, because here's the real big thing. When I was the CIO of the United States Postal Service, I only had to worry about some web apps and some browsers issues. Today, with all the introductions of the smartphones and the tablets and the emergence of the new touch and motion-based interfaces for the games that are now moving to the business side of this, think of the challenge that the CIOs are going to have in this area.
Isn't it fair, though, to say that at some point in time, if you don't start, if you don't move out on some piece of all of this, if you try to stop and wait until you think of everything that needs to be reformed and then do it all at once, you're never going to be able to move out on anything. It seems to me that it's encouraging that I agree with you that the merging of the mobile strategy and the overall broader internet strategy makes a lot of sense, because they're essentially becoming the same thing. If you wait and go, okay, we're going to add on the Section 508, add that in and do all this all at once, especially in terms of the 18 to 24 month window that you have with political appointees who are driving a lot of this change, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, but these are different committees and different groups, and they can run in parallel, and they can do checkpoints and then build, in essence, their first policy and release it. Rather than let's wait till the end, and then by the way, when we get all the answers for 508, we'll then incorporate it. It's too late then.
Kind of go along with that, and I see what you're saying about running in parallel, but when I think of running in parallel, I'm making this motion where one of my hands is going faster than the other, and I wonder whether you'd wind up at the end of that process with not much more progress than you started with.
Well, if you think about this, 12 years into the program, and we still have 80 to 90% of the websites that don't comply, we already know the pieces that don't work. We can at least fix those things right now in the mobile policy and in the merging of the existing websites. So we can solve a lot of this right now. I'm just afraid that this is going to be one of these side programs that we're going to miss the key points in them.
Bob Otto's third most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is White House Seeks Public Input for IT Accessibility Plan. You can read it and all of our stories on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The second most important federal news story of the week from Bob Otto and John Kamensky on the Federal News Countdown next on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Cindy Moran, Senior Director, DISA's Communications Division, on a recent Unified Communications Panel discussion sponsored by General Dynamics IT.
We tend to be a very risk-adverse culture. Even though we engineer and we plan and we design, there's always somebody double-checking the homework to make sure that you've got it right because a commander wants to reach out and touch something. But I think the biggest challenge is cultural assurance. They need to understand culturally that wherever we put those switches, that they're still going to be there.
Connecting people to people anywhere, anytime, on any device. Not just an idea, but a demand of today's governments, businesses, and consumers. General Dynamics IT integrates voice, video, and data services to provide increased mission effectiveness. Secure communications is a basic tenet in healthcare, law enforcement, finance, and defense, and will continue to drive the future of our unified communications. Visit GDIT.com for more information. That's GDIT.com.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Federal managers say they feel left out of key discussions between agency leaders and employees' unions. At some agencies, they're not invited to forums meant to encourage cooperation between management and labor groups, but they're the ones who have to carry out many of the decisions that come from those meetings. They gave Office of Personnel Management Director John Barry an earful recently at the Federal Managers Association conference in Washington.
These are hard times for federal employees. A multi-year pay freeze, rumors of furloughs, and discussions on reducing benefits are the realities that all federal employees face. Now, more than ever, it's important to find ways to save your hard-earned money. One way is with life insurance from WEPA. WEPA offers lower rates and a premium refund policy that's returned over $58 million to its policyholders since 1996. To learn how much you can save, visit WAEPA.org. Once again, that's WAEPA.org. PA.org.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and/or complex and/or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. Remember the Air Force tanker contract? A lot has been happening behind the scenes. We'll talk with the president of the contractor, Boeing, for a progress report. And the FAA expands a program that lets people discuss their mistakes without fear of reprisal or punishment. FAA managers say it's working well for the most part. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week includes the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected this week by Bob Otto of Agilex and John Kamensky of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. And we're up to
number two.
Second most important federal news story of the week from John Kamensky is from Federal Computer Week. The headline is OMB tries to lessen the cumulative burden of regulations. Now, John, a cynical man might say that in this election season of 2012, The administration is trying to kind of dodge an area that they've been accused of, especially in the business community, of not paying much attention to. I'm sure that has nothing to do with this. But there is another story here as it relates to federal agencies.
Yeah. Well, if I go back 15 years to the reinventing government days with Gore, that was one of his big shticks when the Republicans took over the House.
Mm-hmm.
He said, rather than focusing on creating new regulations, let's look at the regulations that are on the books and where are they conflicting and overlapping. And more than 20 years ago, when I was at GAO, I wound up working on reports of looking at conflicting and overlapping regulations between different agencies. And one of my favorites was the Chocolate Manufacturers Association of America was complaining that the Food and Drug Administration was requiring them to use stainless steel in their equipment, and OSHA was saying, no, you have to have baffling on it so it doesn't get too noisy, and you couldn't mix the two.
Mm-hmm.
So those stories, these kind of issues, continue. And that's what I think that Cass Sunstein, the head of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs at OMB, is trying to get at. He says, you need to do some prior consultation, which is common sense, before you start pushing these regulations out.
And it reminds me of what we talked about in Bob's number three story, which is in an environment now where you can crowdsource this stuff and you can really easily communicate on a two-way basis with the people that a potential regulation will affect. They know their little spheres of influence, and they can really give you feedback in a really timely way that wasn't possible even 5 years ago.
Yeah. But what you do is you want to do this before the regulation is out and becomes an adversarial process.
Mm-hmm.
And see, that's where in Bob's case, it was if people would talk about this stuff in advance of trying to formalize the rules,
mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be a lot easier to resolve either technical issues or in some cases even political issues.
People, I think, are surprised, Bob, by how far that collaborative process goes to easing the kinds of tensions that John's referring to.
Mm-hmm. I find all these regulations are a burden, and I don't understand why common sense doesn't prevail and all this stuff.
Well, it strikes me that that's kind of what we're getting at here, is the idea that let's find out all the people this might potentially impact, and let's find out all the ways that it might potentially impact them, and then decide based on the evidence that we have, because short of figuring out some master regulations database, I don't know how else you would be able to find out all the ways something might potentially impact somebody.
The congressional push behind some of this is that Senator Warner is proposing something that the British did, which is for every new regulation, you have to get rid of an old regulation. And that's a little bit of a heavy-handed approach, because sometimes you want to have both, and who makes the trade-off? Do you trade off an IRS reg for an EPA reg?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But what this is doing is, and if you read the memo, it's not like a directive. It's almost like good advice. You know, a new rule may seem perfectly sensible, he said, but it may overlap with an existing requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. So why don't you look at this before you propose it?
Yeah.
You know?
So John, what makes this a new idea? I mean, this is something that people have said to do before. What makes us think that they're going to make these regulations more streamlined?
Let's put it this way. This is just a reminder of use common sense. There's no like 90-day plan due or anything like that. This is almost like a reminder of guys and gals, please pay attention to using common sense before you do these. So,
but it's almost like people, when they drive into Washington, lose their common sense and come to work here. I mean, these senators,
I do that on a day-to-day basis.
I mean, they have common sense. I mean, why don't they simplify this stuff?
Yeah.
John Kaminsky's second most important federal news story of the week is from Federal Computer Week. It's Matt Weigelt's story headlined, OMB Tries to Lessen the Cumulative Burden of Regulations, and you can find it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Bob Otto's second most important federal news story of the week's next on the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
The
Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Where this all converges is with the end user. The end user having a tablet kind of a device or a smartphone needs to have access to any of those types of applications. They don't care where they're running. They just know that from their immediate device, they need to have it and they need the result quickly. And this is where the federated identity management interacts with the application and the data fabric, which interacts with the cloud-based infrastructure, and it all comes together to provide that high-performance, real-time, agile, and secure capability for the end user."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. Interested in boomboxes?
Yeah, I just got the iPhone 4S, and I want a docking system for when I'm at home.
Easy answer. The Insignia boombox with HD radio technology receives all the HD2, HD3 channels here in town and has iTunes tagging for your iPhone 4S.
Oh yeah, iTunes tagging is cool. Tag and buy songs you hear on HD radio stations.
Yep, and it's only $99.
Wow, $99 and works with iPhone 4S? Lead the way.
Learn about HD radio technology at HDradio.com. More radio, more value.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Xeon processors, new HP ProLiant G7 servers are a perfect high-speed solution for lowering costs, improving utilization, and reducing server sprawl. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how together they can power your data center into the future. Talk to GovConnection's experienced federal sales team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Sugar-sweetened teens. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Researchers say teenagers who eat or drink a lot of fructose, which is common as a sweetener in sodas and other processed foods, show signs of problems in their blood that could make things worse for them as grown-ups. At the Medical College of Georgia at Georgia Health Sciences University in Augusta, Dr. Vanessa Bundy looked at data on 559 teens ages 14 to 18. She checked for things such as high blood pressure and high blood sugar levels.
Adolescents that consumed more fructose had higher circulating levels of factors that are known to contribute to cardiovascular disease in adults.
Those factors also raise the risk of diabetes. The study in the Journal of Nutrition was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. Every week in the 3 o'clock hour on Friday, two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are most important to people who work in the government, rank them in order from number 3 to number 1, and we count them down on the Federal News Countdown. This week, it's John Kaminsky from the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Bob Otto from Agilex. And Bob, your second most important story this week is headlined, "Analysis, Concept of Mobile Worker Not New, but Changing Technology Is." It's my colleague Jack Moore's story about my conversation conversation with Karen Evans and Mark Foreman this week. The conversation that I had with them revolved a lot around mobile, as a lot of IT conversations do. And Jack summed it up very well in this headline. What I took away from that conversation was the plan that we have in place now in government that Stephen Van Roekel has put in place, and Lisa Schlosser talked about it at an event that I attended earlier this week, hosted by Affirm. It's fine to have in place, but with the nature of the changing technology a year, 18 months, 2 years from now, we might be in a totally different place as far as what we want to be able to do. And nobody's really sure, I think, if whatever policy comes out is going to hold that long, if it's still going to apply to where technology goes a year or two or three from now. Is that fair to say, do you think?
Yeah, it is. In fact, anybody who's building plans that is over 18 months with the technology today is probably wasting their time because things are going to change.
Yeah, and I think in particular when it comes to mobile, because we talked a little bit, John's story about what the Interior Department's doing with combining apps and using different kinds of technology different ways. Some of the things that they're doing 2 years ago we would have not envisioned would have been worth their time to do, and yet as we discussed, some of the things that they're doing are perfectly logical and in fact extremely good ideas that are kind of on the edge of what you'd expect to see out of government. Is that right?
Yeah, and in fact, we're a society now with this social media where we want instant answers. And if you think about every federal agency, they have a wealth of data and a wealth of these legacy applications. What we really need is something in the middleware in essence, to create these apps that give immediate answers to people who have problems, whether it's with housing or real estate or whatever it may be.
Every once in a while, when something strikes me as particularly noteworthy, if it's an interview I do in the show or whatever, I go to our website and I print out the story to make sure I don't lose it and file it in a file at home. And I was going through that file last weekend, and one of the stories I came across is about 4 years old when I first went on the air here at Federal News Radio. And it was a conversation I had, and now I don't even remember who it was with. But it revolved around the impact of mobile technology and how pervasive WiMAX technology would be at this, what would now be this point in time. And of course, we know now that WiMAX went nowhere fast and nobody's really thinking about it anymore. That's the kind of thing that it sounds like Mark and Karen were getting at. And I didn't have that example to bring up during that conversation, but that's the same idea. Anybody that was building plans on how they were going to do mobile based on, well, WiMAX will be deployed by this time 5 years from now is really, really stuck.
The workforce and the citizens, they're all, everything has changed now, and everyone is on the go, and they want an instant answer, and this is what they get in their own social lives, and they want work to be the same. In fact, if you're in a federal agency today and you have a desktop computer, that isn't really what you need anymore. You need something that will allow you to have access and presentation. And that's really your job now. Yes, there's still some techies who need these high-powered personal computers and all that, but most of the workers in these federal agencies need something that gets access to an internet, access to some of the applications itself, and then presentation so that they can see it and, you know.
A CTO at a cabinet-level agency told me this very morning, we don't need desktops anymore for any reason. There's not a single thing that anybody at my agency does that they need to have that box and screen.
Actually, there's probably 5 to 10% of the people who do need it because it's part of their job. There are people who manage the infrastructure, who develop some of the things that enable the rest of these services. Those people still do. But 80 to 90% of the government workers, this is all they need is something that looks like their own social media device. And, you know, from an IT perspective, being a longtime IT person, you know, we find that that was hard to accept because it's hard to manage all those devices that have all those capabilities, you know. But you know, what's really happening now in these agencies is they'll see these iPads and iPhones and Androids, et cetera, and the first thing they do is I've got to secure it and I've got to manage it. I've got to know where it's at, et cetera. Well, it's broader than that. What they need to be doing is implementing a enterprise-wide managed mobile service that sets up infrastructure, governance, training, enablement, etc. Once they've set that service up, it doesn't matter what the device is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can use the device, and the device is managed.
Now, the management piece, John, of what Bob is talking about when it comes to workforce and citizens, as he was saying that, it occurred to me that the dramatic change, I guess, is that the expectations now are not being set by the companies that produce the technology anymore. They're being set by the end user. And these, with the volume of people who are coming into agencies and saying, I want to be able to use my fill in the blank or some equivalent on the network. And that's, there's been some of that throughout the history of technology in government, but not but, like but we see it now.
Yeah, and for example, if you look at California and Governor Brown wants to take away all the state-owned cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
Say people are using their own cell phones anyway. They can use it for state business.
Yeah.
And so this notion of being able to use any device, whether it's owned by the government or personally owned, but it's somehow the transmission and the data are secure, makes some sense. The thing that I find interesting about your statement is you can't plan out more than 18 months is that the budget cycle is 3 years. And so everybody that wants something 3 years from now has to buy it now, but they don't know what they're buying because 18 months from now the technology is going to be different.
Yeah,
that is a problem. John, I want you to think of a new paradigm here. You're a low-income person, and you're looking for low-income housing. You know, you do have one of these devices, these cell phones. Okay?
The homeless and these, in the district all have cell phones.
Yeah, and you do have these. And, you know, when you're looking for, let's say, a low-income apartment, et cetera, you want to be able to get on that mobile app and find this thing now. Think of that paradigm. You would have never thought about this 5 years ago. Or if you're a low-income person getting financial assistance for food, like food stamp program itself. You want to know where you can redeem your food stamps now. And you have a device, mm-hmm. a mobile device.
But in third world countries, they're further ahead than we are in the use of mobile technology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people that can't even read are using cell phones for banking and for trading goods and stuff like that. In Africa and India and South America. And I think that in a way, we're still a bit behind on the use of the mobile technology, especially in terms of government services.
Well, here's what we did in all the federal agencies about 2 years ago is we told all the federal agencies, put all your data out into this .gov website, and then people will come in and access it. They don't really want to come and access the data. What they want is they want to have services that apply to them, just like these apps that they can get out there in the industry.
The second most important federal news story of the week from Bob Otto is headlined, Concept of Mobile Worker Not New, but Changing Technology Is. And you can read it and all of the stories on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Bob Otto and by John Kamensky. When In-Depth with Francis Rose continues, it's Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Agency of the Month, Navy, brought to you by the CSC NGEN team.
Undersecretary of the Navy for Manpower and Reserve Affairs, Juan Garcia.
The community and the country should know you have never had a more qualified recruit. Traditional educational background, we've never been here before. Technical savvy, we've never been here before. So the country should feel great about the quality of sailor they're getting.
Agency of the Month, Thursday mornings in March at 10 o'clock on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
CSC stands ready to partner with the Department of Navy on Next Generation Enterprise Network to achieve a fully integrated naval networking environment. The world-class CSC team, including Harris, General Dynamics IT, and Verizon, has the experience to deliver innovative networking solutions that enhance performance, improve security, and cut costs to affordably meet evolving needs of sailors and Marines today and for years to come. Visit NGenReady.com for more information. That's NGenReady.com.
Nominations for the 3rd Annual Causey Award are now being accepted. If you're wondering who could be nominated, check out our past winners. 2010, GSA's Jenny Lyman created, implemented, and managed a program to develop entry-level employees into mission-critical leaders within GSA's FAS. Nominate someone in your office who you think has made a difference helping people realize their potential. Don't delay. Nominations for the 3rd Annual Causey Awards close Friday, April 6th. Go to federalnewsradio.com, search Causey Award.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dort to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests on the Federal News Countdown this week, choosing the most important federal news stories of the week, are John Kamensky from the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Bob Otto from AgileX. And we're up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week from Bob Otto is it fits very nicely with the conversation that we've been having about serving citizens and serving end users. And this is our my colleague Jared Serbu's story, headline: Army tired of waiting for new mobile devices. What do you think when you look at what the Army's talking about here, Bob?
Well, for those who haven't read the story, this was about the Army spent a considerable amount of time and money on certifying their first Android-based smartphone. And the challenge here was the certification process took longer than the device stayed in existence. The device is no longer in existence anymore. And what we've come to now is what I think is sort of is the perspective of what symbolizes everything that's wrong in the Washington area here, is that we, in essence, build processes that take too long to get things done. So it's pretty bad when the certification process takes longer than building the product line. And that's the issue here.
Jared's story says it took DOD many, many months to compile a security technical implementation guide for its first non-BlackBerry device, an Android-based tablet known as the Dell Streak. Now, the Dell Streak was around for a very short period of time. The Army took a look at it, decided it would meet their needs, and about the time that they got their STIG done, Dell discontinued the Streak. Yeah. And they have agreed to keep it in production to satisfy the Army. They knew they could sell X number of units to the Army, so it was wise on their part to do that. But this, John, fits exactly with the piece that we were just talking about a few minutes ago, and you mentioned something that I wanted to explore that is appropriate here, too. We're talking about the likelihood of planning on an 18-month cycle and making sense and agreeing that it doesn't really technology-wise, and yet your point is exactly right on that you got to plan budget-wise on a 3-year cycle. How do we get around that to where you can buy stuff and get it certified in a way that you can actually pay for it when it's still something that you can use?
Well, that's shifting to a different kind of budgeting technique. Instead of going to budget for an item, you budget for a capability. Now, that's going to make oversight in Congress a little nervous, but if they know what their capability that they're trying to do, for example, the ability to be able to have access to the Internet from outside the office, from, I don't know, Planet Mars or whatever, then that's different than saying we need to buy 10 of these kinds of devices or 30 of those. If you look at, for example, the Veterans Administration, when they're trying to move to electronic medical records and all the doctors now want iPads to be able to read these medical records on, you couldn't have predicted that demand a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. The idea of oversight in people in Congress getting nervous, it sounds to me, Bob, comes from the idea of maybe a lack of confidence that Congress would have in people at the agencies being able to first predict and then execute on the capability rather than the piece of equipment, the hardware, software, whatever. Is that a reasonable fear on their part?
Well, but it's not unique to government. The commercial area has the same issue here. I mean, this technology has just taken off, and there's so much capabilities out there in software now, whether it's in the commercial side or it's in the government side here, that none of us would have been able to predict this. I have to give the Army, though, kudos for stopping a bad process. And the other thing here, too, is, you know, I'm a big proponent of standardization. I think that we ought to find, like, standard processes and standard certification and use it across the government where we can. Same way with standard security levels. But one of the things here is that certification isn't limited to mobile devices. I mean, think about what FedRAMP's doing here. And I like FedRAMP, the idea of it. But they're getting ready to, in essence, sort of certify these web providers for the cloud. And so I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking, well, once they certify a cloud provider is making changes every day, week, and month. How are they going to recertify those things? And the core of all this issue here is that certification is needed, but the process is taking too long. And so you've got to simplify this. And so the Army's answer to this is, I won't have to certify the devices anymore if I just make them thin clients. And I'll just access it through, in essence, the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a way of getting around it. That is a paradigm shift, which I think the government is going to come to, is let's not put this software on some of these devices. Let's move it into a cloud.
I'm already starting to hear agencies getting really comfortable with that idea really fast, and I have to say I didn't expect that to happen. I expected that it would be a lot longer transformation for agencies to be willing to do that, John. Just because of the culture more than the technology process.
Well, part of it is cost. I mean, nobody wants to buy new machines, or like some agencies, when they do a technology refresh, are still going around with memory sticks to different machines and upgrading them individually, as opposed to being able to push it over the web or being able to do it out of, you know, refresh it on a cloud so everybody's using the same application or something. And I think that it's going to be cost drivers are going to be pushing this as opposed to merely culture.
So, John, think of it this way, is 5 years from now, you're an agency CIO. You won't have to buy infrastructure anymore.
Yeah.
You'll be, in essence, investing your money in data, analytics, and software. And that's where you'll put your money. Yeah. Why would you want to spend money on hardware?
So that brings me to the question that you and I, Bob, have actually talked about before, which is, is the CIO core overall in government and the deputies who will eventually become, theoretically, the CIOs at the agencies, are they ready for that kind of a shift in their portfolio of responsibility, do you think?
I think that all CIOs have capabilities. The problem in their job is that their day-to-day job of running what they have is like 80% of their life. And so they don't have a lot of time to, in essence, engineer what they know is right to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that makes change so long for a CIO.
The short-term day-to-day planning and execution sucks up all the time that a leader would normally spend on long-term planning. Is that fair to say? Conceptualization.
Yeah, it is.
Bob Otto's most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. Jared Serbu's story headlined, Army Tired of Waiting for New Mobile Devices. John Kamensky's my other guest on the Federal News Countdown this week, and his most important federal news story of the week. We'll wrap up the countdown next on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Max out your privacy settings on social networks. Restrict as much as you can what people can see of you. Close all your old accounts. Chances are it's got an email that you've reused. They could guess the maiden name of your mother or your first pet or something.
Yeah.
A lot of the celebrities whose email accounts were hacked, their challenge question was something that you could look up on the internet.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
In the beloved fairy tale, Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council. Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and or complex and or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon Family Groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon Family Group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
For 125 years, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth of our nation's capital and its surrounding communities. Your support will help over 21,000 youth who need you most walk through the doors of a Boys and Girls Club and walk out with a plan for their future. Every dollar donated in fiscal year 2012 will be matched up to $250,000 by Stanley Martin Homes. You can help. Go online to www.bgcgw.org and change someone's life. This message is brought to you by GEICO.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests on the Federal News Countdown this week are John Kaminsky, the IBM Center for the Business of Government, and Bob Otto of Agilex. And John Kaminsky's most important Federal News story of the week is from the Washington Post. Joe Davidson's story, headline, Senate Panel Considers Obama's Reorganization Plan. And somehow I knew that you would put a reorg story somewhere among your stories this week, John.
Well, thank you very much.
I just felt it coming when I saw that you were going to be on the countdown this week. Is the president headed in the right direction here, do you think, as far as how he wants to do this, the reorg that he has in mind?
Well, the reorg proposal is to give him the authority to do the plan that he recommended in his State of the Union address.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually moving on a parallel track of not only moving the boxes, reorganizing the agencies in a legal statutory way. But I think that there's also an effort to begin integrating them virtually. And he's had executive orders and directives and planning things that are going on sort of behind the scenes. So it's a parallel track that he's moving down. And you really need to move down both, because just moving the agencies doesn't necessarily align them in terms of the kind of work that they do.
Mm-hmm. The story says President Obama favors the Reforming and Consolidating Government Act of 2012, which would increase his power to reorganize government. And a quote from Senator Lieberman, co-sponsoring this bill with Senator Warner, says this proposal reinstates the government reorganization authority that past presidents relied on from 1932 to 1984. That came out, the 1932 reference is the Hoover Commission, which is...
No, that was 74. 47. Hoover's much later.
Okay. Thank you very much for correcting me on
Brownlow.
That. This is why I love having you on the show, because you know this stuff cold. Now, my question then is along those same lines. Since 1984, which presidents have asked for this and which haven't asked for this same authority that President Obama is asking for, to have this back?
I don't know if any president has actually asked for it back. I don't know whether George H.W. Bush asked for it. I don't believe Clinton asked for it at all. I don't believe George W. Bush asked for it. And because they weren't trying to dramatically reorganize the government, they were emphasis to create, like the Department of Homeland Security, or reorganize the intelligence community. But that was done on... with Congress, in fact, in some cases, Congress taking the lead.
We've referred a couple of times to your experience in reinventing government with Vice President Gore. Having this authority, how would that have made a difference in what you tried to do, if at all?
When we started off, Vice President Gore called a small group of us into his office, and he said, I don't want to rehash the let's move the boxes stories. Mm-hmm. That was something that Reagan emphasized, and he says, let's fix what's inside the boxes as opposed to moving. And that gets into the virtual reorganization. But in reality, you need kind of both. But at the time, there wasn't any desire to do massive reorganization because it wasn't seen as improving customer service or anything like that, mm-hmm. which was what the emphasis of that effort was.
Bob, as you look at these efforts to reorganize and so on, I'm going to guess that the curmudgeon in you that you've expressed several times throughout the program sees something here that maybe the rest of us don't see.
Well, you know, I was in government for a long period of time, and I got to see these agencies brought together in Homeland Security today. And, you know, I sort of think it's the right thing to do, but it took years to make it be effective and work. And I tend to think that we could go ahead and give him the power to do this and implement his plan, but I'm not sure if we would see it for the next 5 years, the benefit of it.
That's because
it's not that it isn't a good thing to do or that people don't have the right intentions. This is massive to make this change.
Yeah. Yes, I agree.